Hi, folks. This is part two of three of Truth Versus News here on December 31, 2023, as we get ready to celebrate 2024 and hope it's a much better year than what we have been reporting for 2023, because a lot of has been happening. And so, Jim, I guess you ought to carry on. What you got next?
Very, very good, Don. Top 10 stories at 2023, number five. Anti-Semitism is failing. Anti-Semitism hoax has officially collapsed. Jews just don't know it yet, but it's over, writes Andrew Anglin. Look at the sign. You will not anti-Semite me in complacency with genocide. Marsha Blackburn. Anti-Semitism will not be tolerated in the United States. No college or university that allows these heinous acts of anti-Semitism on their campus should receive a single dime from the federal government. And what they're talking about is objections to Israeli genocide of the Palestinian people. That's supposed to be an intolerable act of anti-Semitism. The transformation has happened so fast, I don't think people have yet grasped it. The official definition of anti-Semitism before October 7th, hating Jews for no reason. The post-7/10 definition of anti-Semitism, saying Jews should stop killing babies. It's a really massive transformation. I know most non-Jews don't understand it. What's even crazier is most Jews don't even appear to understand it. Jews have a psychosis where they view any criticism of their behavior as hate. I'm supposed to be the world's top anti-Semite, but all I ever did was criticize their behavior. Jews had some degree of plausible deniability with regard to their agenda to push homosexuality on children or to flood white countries with poor, illiterate, non-white immigrants. They could claim these things were good. Now they're taking the same tack. If you criticize our behavior, it means you hate us, therefore you are evil. But they are taking this position in the context of, we slaughter children. It's really irresponsible of them. This gave them so much power and they've just pissed it away. People hate us for no reason because we murder children. It is simply not a viable PR strategy. New York Post writes, Jewish student that filed a federal civil rights lawsuit accusing the University of California of allowing a long-standing unchecked spread of anti-Semitism on its Berkeley campus. The lawsuit claims Jew hatred has boiled over following the terror group Hamas sneak attack against Israel of October 7th, even citing the statement from Cal Berkeley's own law school dean, Edwin Sherminsky, in their complaint. The whole thing is now becoming unraveled. Since October 7th, anti-Semitism, really, criticism of Israel, has run rampant at the school, the complaint said, citing numerous incidents of intimidation, harassment, and physical violence against Jewish students. Even the ADL admits Israel is lost young. Here's a sign. Israel's killing children again. Enjoy your weekend. The House has even passed a bill saying anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. The resolution, presented as a condemnation of anti-Semitism, passed on a vote of 314-14-92. Only 13 Democrats and one Republican voted against. 92 Democrats voted present. The Republican-drafted resolution declares the House of Representatives clearly and firmly states that anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism, which is frankly absurd. Even Jerry Nadler, the most senior Jewish member of the House, criticized its language ahead of the vote. The resolution suggests that all anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. That is either intellectually disingenuous or just factually wrong. And it unfairly implicates many of my Orthodox former constituents in Brooklyn, many of whose families rose from the ashes of the Holocaust. Nadler claimed that while most anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism, If the authors of the bill were at all familiar with Jewish history and culture, they should know Jewish anti-Zionism that was and is expressly not anti-Semitic. This resolution ignores the fact that even today, certain Orthodox Hasidic Jewish communities, the Satmars in New York and others, as well as adherents of the pre-state Jewish labor movement, have held views that are at odds with the modern Zionist conception. Thomas Massey was the only Republican to vote against the bill. Last week, he was the lone member to vote against a resolution claiming denying Israel's right to exist is a form of anti-Semitism. Explaining his opposition, he said the resolution also equated anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, though not as explicitly as the bill passed on Tuesday. Talk about reducing the argument to absurdity. Israel says it's anti-Semitic to invoke the Genocide Convention over Gaza. South Africa has invoked the Genocide Convention, formally launching a case at the UN International Court of Justice, accusing Israel of genocide for its mass atrocities in the Gaza state. Israel immediately responded by deep sigh, accusing South Africa of blood libel. Blood libel, for those who don't know, refers to the way medieval Europeans would falsely accuse Jews of murdering Christians in blood sacrifices in order to justify persecuting them, which is to say, Israel has responded to South Africa's accusations by accusing South Africa of anti-Semitism. Here we have a tweet. South Africa is formally accusing Israel of genocide, responding with, "That's anti-Semitic, ain't gonna cut it. Blood liable." Israel slams South Africa for requesting ICJ genocide investigation. Scott, your thoughts?
Well, when everyone saw the Houthis and the Tutsis fighting, and I think not the Houthis in Yemen, but the African nation, and saw one side hacking and macheting and killing these people, it was a genocide. It was defined a genocide. And the world was horrified and disgusted and outraged by it. The Israelis are doing the same thing to the Palestinians, only they're using concrete to dismember. We haven't seen, Jim, because of what, the sensitivity of the West, we haven't seen the photographs or the videos of people, of children missing arms, their faces smashed in with concrete because of their eyes gone. That there are horrific images of what is occurring to the people as a result of this Israeli genocide, and that's what it is. And this phenomenon of the neocons, the Republicans, the Democrat, all of their rushing to support Israel, the arrogance and the blindness and the illegality, the unlawfulness and the unconstitutionality of trying to define language. You can't say anything that's anti-Zionist or it's anti-Semitic. That's going to topple. That's going to cause revolution. That's going to cause people to get, increasingly their backs against the wall. And what happens when you corner people? They either fall apart into a fetus position or they fight back. And I think America and Australia and Canada and Britain, all of the people are rising up to fight back because they're tired of 20, 30, 40 years of being pushed in this direction. It's ironic, that story you just said, I didn't realize it was there, but I was saying exactly the same thing. The end of the Holocaust excuse of browbeating everything that is said against Israeli behavior is anti-Semitic, those days are done. People do not have an appetite for that. They will vomit it out the moment they smell that. There's a physiological rebuff, a nauseation that is going to increasingly occur because the Israelis, as Brian said earlier, this is interesting too, the Israeli behavior is unadjustable, in my opinion. They're not going to back down. They're not going to change. There's no love in these people. There's no love in Israel whatsoever. There's sodomy, rainbow flags. Tel Aviv is the headquarters of homosexuality. That article talks about the homosexualization that the Jews push. The biggest percentage of homosexuals are Jews, fascinatingly enough. Then they're pushing this and the whole LGBT and wokeism and all this. All of this is blowing up America like a balloon ready to pop. And I see a massive, isolation of Washington, an ostracization of Washington, and all of the Republicans. I wouldn't be surprised if all of the Republicans lose in the next election because they're going to back the Jewish war. It's going to create another Vietnam. We will lose miserably because we're going to be fighting Iran, Russia, China, and no other NATO country is going to participate because they'll the moment they try, you will have flames and burning in Paris and in London, and Russia really is going to be the safest country in Europe, and you will see people flock to Russia. So the entire American, Canadian, Australian, British oligarchy, if you will, is about to come crashing down, and the flame has been ignited by Israel's sadistic, demonic behavior. Jim?
Brian?
Okay, I'm going to try to do this little history lesson here without sounding too religious for all the people that are haters out there. But let's just go through this, okay? Why are the Jews special in terms of why they are hated? Well, they crucified Jesus, right? Okay, let's call it that simple, but it's not that simple at all. Jesus got himself the death penalty because he turned over the money changers' hands in the temple. Other than that, he was cool with the Jews. He was having a good time. He had a hard time with the Pharisees. He thought they knew everything, but he was teaching with them. He was sitting down having dinner with them. He was having lunch with them. He was working with Nicodemus and these elders, and he's trying to help them understand what the new movement was all about. But Jesus pissed off the money lenders. And unfortunately, that gave rise to a new problem called anti-Semitism as it developed throughout the history. In the 1400s, we had a situation called the Great Eviction. And it's a perfect example of how all the Jews, even the good ones, ended up having to deal with the problems as a result of the few that were corrupting the entire thing. In 1495, Lithuania expelled the Jews. In 1498, Portugal expelled the Jews. In 1540, Italy expelled the Jews. 1550, Bavaria. And you could keep on going through time with all of these nations throughout all these times that have gone through what's called the Great Eviction. Why did they do it? What happened? Why was there a run on Germany's capital at the end of World War I around the late 30s? What happened to the banks? Hyperinflation. Oh, let's blame the Jews. Well, there was good people all over the place. And of course, a movie like Schindler's List is going to leverage into the idea that these are just good religious people. But the fact is, it was always the banking cartels. It was always the moneylenders. And where's our problem today? In 1971, Richard Nixon comes along with the Richard tapes, and he's talking about the Jews. They're getting everywhere. They're all over the place. Let's talk about where we are today, okay? The Jews here in America, pornography and hookup culture, generally not something that's considered to be very good. Pornhub, RedTube, Chatterbait, Wicked Pictures, Vivid, Tushy, Grindr, Sex.com, Match, Tinder. You go through them all. Al Goldstein, Nathan Abrams, Fabian Thalman, Gary Kremen, Sean Rad, Ruben Sturman, Adam Glasser, Ron Jeremy, Stefan Picard, Mike Coolidge, Greg Lansky, Steve Orenstein. You can go through the list. They own the pornography and hookup culture here in America. Let's talk about feminism. Feminism here in America has really screwed up the family unit, hasn't it? Gloria Steinem, Betty Friedan, Shiluth Firestone, Ellen Willis, Heather Booth. I can go on and on and on with these lists. And this names. Let's talk about BlackRock. BlackRock's a huge influence here in America. Larry Fink, Robert Capito, Susan Wagner, Barbara Novick, Ben Golub, Rolf Schoenstein. BlackRock companies, they own Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Meta, P&G, NVIDIA, Tesla, Johnson & Johnson. I could go on and on and on. Let's talk about COVID. COVID just came around as this massive thing. CDC director, Rochelle Walensky, Jewish. Deputy director, Anna Schulett, Jewish. CDC chief of staff, Sherry Berger, Jewish. CDC chief medical officer, Mitchell Wolf, Jewish. I can go on and on and on. I can talk all day long. I can talk about the mainstream media. I can talk about the hedge fund industry. I can talk about all of these things. The problem is not your day-to-day neighbor who's trying to be a good guy and is a decent Jew. The problem is these guys at the top running the cartels.
Oh, you said that very, very well, Brian. 100% spot on.
Remember, the Jews said, this is what they said, let his blood be upon us and our children, when they crucified Christ, when Pontius Pilate
Barabbas,
said to them,
Barabbas, give us Barabbas, give us Barabbas. And that was the moneylenders driving the crowd.
And the Jews forced Mel Gibson to take that out of his movie, The Passion of the Christ. That statement, and it's a biblical statement, the Jews said when they all surrounded and said, give us Barabbas, they said, let his blood, Jesus Christ, the Lord, let his blood be upon us and our children. And it has been ever since, Jim.
And one more thing that people don't realize. Hebrews chapter 8, the new covenant that Jesus gave his blood for is a new covenant with the Jews.
Amen.
Great stuff. Great stuff, you guys. Not to mention that all the leaders of the Biden administration are also Jewish. Janet Yellen, Secretary of the Treasury. Alejandro Mayorkas, Secretary of Homeland Security. Anthony Blinken, Secretary of State. Merrick Garland, Attorney General. All Jews. Top 10 stories at 2023, number 6. Border catastrophe continues. Biden's wide open border record, 50 million immigrants are now in the United States. Foreign-born citizens in America have reached almost 50 million, primarily spiked by Biden's wide open border. Most simply, almost 15% of America's total population is now foreign-born. The surge came during the U.S.-Mexico border crisis under Biden's liberal policy, according to the U.S. Census. The number is likely much higher because the current population survey of foreign-born does not account for those who have escaped border patrol. CIS Research Director Stephen Camerota and CIS demographer Karen Ziegler wrote about it. Meanwhile, the Chicago mayor, Brandon Johnson, begged Biden for assistance with illegal border crossers. The entire country is now at stake, he declares. Published January 27th, Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson seemed to suggest during recent televised comments that the city of Chicago is at a breaking point due to the influx of illegal aliens in the city. It's very easy for someone like Johnson to virtue signal, saying that their city is a sanctuary city. But it's a whole different matter when the reality of the situation sets in. It didn't take long for Chicago to buckle under the weight of this crisis. Fox reports, Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson warned the entire country is at stake if President Biden doesn't spend resources addressing the migrant crisis overwhelming his city. The progressive leader appeared Wednesday on CNN to talk about the surge of migrants into the sanctuary city. He argued leaders in his state and around the country need to work together in a more coordinated approach backed by significant financial support from the Biden admin. Johnson touted his admin's efforts providing housing, health care, and schooling for migrant families. However, he admitted the city's resources were being stretched and needed the federal government's help. Check this out. Migrant crisis has U.S. taxpayer on the hook for up to $451 billion, according to a House GOP report. Americans could pay up to $451 billion to care for migrants who enter the U.S. illegally but have been released into the country or escaped from custody. Every day, millions of taxpayer dollars are spent on costs directly associated with illegal immigration and the unprecedented crisis at the southwest border sparked by DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas's policies, the House Homeland Security Committee interim staff report states, only a small fraction is ever recouped from the taxes paid by illegals, the rest falling on the shoulders of American citizens and lawful residents. Compiled from federal and state records, media reports, and other public information, the 50-page document outlines the taxpayer costs incurred in medical care, housing, education, and other welfare benefits for tens of millions of migrants, to say nothing of the additional costs for law enforcement. The bill for government care and housing could total as much as $451 billion per year, nationwide, for apprehended migrants and known getaways who've entered the U.S. since 2021, according to figures the House panel cites from the Center for Immigration Studies. Between 16.8 million and 29 million illegals currently reside in the U.S., according to estimates the committee cites from the Conservative Federation for American Immigration Reform in Yale University, 3.8 million of whom have entered since Biden took office in January of 2021. Meanwhile, Chinese nationals are flooding across the southern border at a record pace. The monthly figure mark, a shocking increase from fiscal year 2021 and 2022, when there were only 450 and 2,176 southwest border encounters with Chinese nationals, respectively. The number surged to 24,314 in fiscal year 2023 and has already climbed past 9,000 in just the first 2 months of fiscal year 2024 in an article published on December 30th. House Homeland Security Committee Chairman Representative Mark Green warned earlier that some of the Chinese nationals entering the U.S. have connection to the Chinese Communist Party and the People's Liberation Army, citing information from a Border Patrol sector chief. Here's Jenny Sayre. News, I asked Representative Mark Green about his claim the Biden admin is releasing migrants tied to the CCP PLA into the U.S. interior. Green said the intel came directly from a Border Patrol chief. Meanwhile, the Washington Post, and this is so absurd, I can hardly believe they published this, claimed borders are bad for national security. The Washington Post is pushing a bizarre new theory, which argues that national borders are, in fact, bad for national security. Catherine Ramhall, a columnist with a Jeff Bezos owned newspaper, frequently regarded as an outlet for the CIA, by the way, deployed twisted logic to conclude Republican efforts to end America's mass immigration crisis would actually make the situation worse. What does safeguarding national security have to do with curbing immigration, she asked herself before answering incorrectly. For the most part, not much, but they are related in the sense that the measures Republicans want to impose would undermine U.S. security. Scott, have you heard an argument that ridiculous of late?
Well, yeah, it's truly astounding, the abuse. It's not an alien, a permit entry. It's an invasion. It's the military being deaf and silent on this is also alarming. Northern Command is supposed to be responsible for the integrity of the continental United States. Nothing has been done to stop it. It's a violation, as I just put up there, 8 U.S. Code 1327, aiding and assisting aliens to enter the United States is a crime. And this is what politicians are doing, including Greg Abbott. And that it warrants, listening and reading again. Any person who knowingly aids or assists any alien, inadmissible under Section 1182, to enter the United States, or who connives or conspires with any person or persons to allow, procure, or permit any such alien to enter the United States shall be fined under Title 18 or imprisoned not more than 10 years or both. You can get a 10-year prison sentence for aiding and abetting the illegal entry of aliens into the United States. And that's what members of Congress are doing. That's what Abbott, that's what all, and Newsom, that's the charge that should be applied. You're aiding and abetting a legal entry into the United States. They're not going through the lawful process that the citizens of the United States have defined. The citizens and the legislature shall make all laws, and the people have made a law to come into this country. This is the process. These are the places that you do it. And this is being circumvented by this attempt to Kalerky plan the United States. Tucker's talked about it too. Replacement theory, bringing in brown people from Haiti and South America and Central America and Mexico and Africa and elsewhere, bringing them into the United States. There's constant talk too about Syria and Hezbollah and Hamas and all these Middle Easterners coming in. I think that is an Israeli Zionist plot to create false flag attacks. But here's the thing, Jim, they are pouring in record numbers more than ever before, and they are going to rape and pillage, burn and destroy like the savage animals that they are, and treat the United States like a Target store, rampaging and running and taking and stealing everything they can. Escape from New York is upon us, and this is going to trigger tribalism. It's going to trigger, killing. You're going to have people defending their neighborhoods. Remember this, too. You will have veterans and others getting their weapons out, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a loud weapon, but they will get their weapons out, and they will kill, illegal, brown people, Mexicans, blacks, whatever they are, because they're going to come in, and they're not going to be smart enough to realize they're coming into a place where now people are turning into warriors. And you're going to have a lot of dead illegal aliens coming in who are just looking to pillage and destroy. This is where inevitably it goes. When you invade a country and you violate and harm the population, the sectors of the population will rise up and defend with lethal force their homes, their family, their churches, and elsewhere. And they will do it ruthlessly. And I see that coming upon the United States. You will, and this isn't just me. You know, Stephen Pidgeon, we've talked about it. The walled cities are going to be coming back, and intolerance for anyone that tries to come in without appropriate ID. That's all coming. So, and I see it coming in Europe too, Jim.
And of course, we have a broken military between the woke and the jab and all that. We have been unable to meet our recruiting goals. They've lowered the standards, which are going to generate all kinds of problems. We've run out of munitions, sending them all to Ukraine. The U.S. is probably at the weakest point militarily to defend itself in the nation's history relative to the forces arrayed against us. And some of us are concerned that the Chinese, who had a problem arising from their one-child policy, where there was a preference for boys, has, I don't know, millions and millions of single men for whom there are no corresponding Chinese females to form families. I believe they're sending a whole lot of them across our border. It's well established they have a route. They have hotels that are all Chinese. These are sophisticated young people. These aren't individuals who are lacking in resources. And I believe they're forming an army in the United States that could be used against us from within. Brian, your thoughts.
Well, it's obviously a divide and conquer strategy that's being executed on American people. They're dividing us in order to conquer us, washing out our culture. Mm-hmm. How do you fight a divide and conquer strategy? Number one, you expose it. Number two, those that are pushing the strategy need to be divided and conquered themselves. How do we divide and conquer these people that are pushing this game? Well, we're going to have a leader, aren't we? We're going to have something. We're going to have some martyrs, some people that are willing to sacrifice their lives to do this. I think that the problem that I've got, I was having a conversation with the next city council member right here in town. We were getting ready to talk about our tomato seasons. And so we had a little powwow to talk about it. He says, I think we just Texans just need to go down to that border and start shooting it up. And I thought, wow, you're so wrong. It's not these people. We should be loving these people. Think about what they've just gone through. I mean, I saw a video this morning of a 10-year-old boy lost in the desert. I mean, talk about terror. It's terrible what's happening. The problem is we've got to direct our energy in the right place, and we've got to divide and conquer the right people. What are they scared of? They're scared of losing their money, and they're scared of vigilantes. They're scared of Americans that are going to be able to figure out who they are, where they live, how they operate, and how they think. Maybe it's time to start thinking in terms of what do we need to do to scare these people, rather than let's go down to the border and stop this insurrection, because obviously they're letting it happen.
We got a huge...
How do you take out a banker? I mean, it's the question. How do you take out bankers? How do you take out the banking cartels? The only time it's worked in history is full expelling of them from the nation. That's the only time it hedged the problem and slowed it down.
Fascinating.
And it starts with expelling them from the community they live in. And I said that the other week. Someone talked about the greatest pusher of this LGBT psychosis is some rich lesbian who's the daughter of some wealthy, billionaire or something like that. And I said, well, she lives somewhere. She lives in some county in some house, and there's a sheriff in charge of that county. So it's you're right, Brian. It's expelling these people from the society, but it starts one house, one county, one town, one county at a time. These people need to be expelled, and by all means necessary, Jim.
Yes, and we need the legal authority to do it. Meanwhile, top 10 stories of 2023, number 7, fake Biden losing. The U.S. may be flouting its own laws by sending unrestricted aid to Israel. For example, Biden admin have told CNN they're not considering placing conditions on aid beyond those that already exist in federal law, saying the U.S. expects Israel to abide by international humanitarian law and that the IDF conducts internal legal reviews of its strike beforehand. What rubbish. We're not going to do a damn thing other than protect Israel in the process. Not a single thing, Biden told Democrat donors. Some foreign policy experts say those existing legal conditions aren't being adequately enforced against Israel, given the high civilian death toll in Gaza, which has exceeded 20,000 since October 7th. That includes policies designed to prevent arms transfers that enable violation of international humanitarian law or to foreign forces suspected of using American weapons to harm civilians. One law in particular has got more attention from progressive Democrats, the Leahy Law. They argue the U.S. is shirking its legal duty to ensure assistance to Israel is not being used to violate human rights. First approved by Congress in 1997, the Leahy Law's purpose is to prevent the U.S. from being implicated in serious crimes committed by foreign security forces it supports by cutting off aid to specific units if the U.S. has credible information the unit committed a gross violation of human rights. No security forces, not even American, are entirely immune to committing such violations. I think it would be very significant if the admin finally were to make clear that our aid is not unconditional, and if you commit types of crimes, there's a consequence. Why shouldn't we say that? We say it to other countries. The author said doing so wouldn't necessarily cause Israel to change its strategy, since it can just ensure any unit prohibited from receiving U.S. assistance is being funded through its own coffers instead. But sends a message politically that we're not willing to tolerate this kind of egregious behavior. That's not only important for the protection of human rights, but also for U.S. credibility globally. As the international community grows louder in its condemnation of Israel's war, the Biden admin is trying to salvage some credibility by ramping up critiques of Israel's tactics. That's including urging Israel to exercise more care for civilian life and pushing it and the hostilities as quickly as possible, if not before the end of the year. But that has so far appeared to have little operational impact on Israel or the humanitarian situation in Gaza, which is only deteriorating further in the absence of sufficient food, water, sanitation, electricity, communication, and medical service. Meanwhile, the Senate has returned, and this was the week before Christmas and after. Schumer decided to keep senators in town to continue negotiating a border deal to unlock $111 billion spending package with military aid for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. The House Speaker, however, in my opinion, brilliantly adjourned his chamber for the holidays, meaning even if the Senate does reach a deal, the bill cannot be finalized until after the new year. Schumer vowed there'd still be a vote on the military aid package next week. Republicans, however, are looking for significant changes to immigration law to make it harder for immigrants to enter the country. There are even signs that Biden's willing to give them what they want to secure the over $60 billion he wants to fund the war in Ukraine for another year. Meanwhile, we all know this guy is not the real Joe Biden. He's a fake president. Look, wearing a latex mask, look at the neck where it ends. We have clones, doubles, actors, transvestites hiding in clear sight. Here's the real Joe on the left, the fake guy on the right. The ears are not the same. The face is not the same. The smile is not the same. The signature is not the same. They even have different shape and size of skulls. Not a feature that can be changed from time to time, like the suit you're wearing or the tie you put on that day. The first imposter this author has found appeared in early 2018, which is consistent with my conclusion that the real Joe died in 2017. No way on God's earth was this creep the real Biden. So there's been no real Biden for the last 3 years. Absolutely stunning. Scott, your thoughts?
Well, it's, you know, again, a sign of the end and the decadence in the West that this even occurred. The overthrow of Trump, the election meddling, election fraud, and the ruination of America ever since the overthrow of Trump. And Trump allowed this to happen. Everyone allowed it, especially in the Congress. How it will resolve itself, I think, is only going to be civil war. And that's why Alex Jones, on his interview the other day, had been constantly talking about the films that are coming out on civil war. And I think it's inevitable because, again, the woke and the left and the Democrats are incapable of changing. They're incapable of any kind of diplomacy. They are incapable of turning. They are going to clash, and it's like, I think McGregor said it, America is like an 18-wheeler going downhill without brakes, heading towards cement barriers, a cement blockade. That's what America, and the Democrats, Joe Biden, the dementia guy is in the driver, and Americans are oblivious. You know, some of us are on the roof just going, come quickly, Lord Jesus. But this country is inevitably going to, unless there's a Nineveh moment of national repentance and expelling of the sin from America, unless there's that moment, God will not heal this country. He will turn it into a Sodom and Gomorrah smoldering ruin. And I think we've had a civil war before. And I think, it's coming upon us again. And all of us who went to Washington, you know, I went there not January 6th, but before that, but everyone who went to Washington on January 6th was ready for a civil war. That's why they went there, because they saw the overthrow of Trump as the beginning of a civil war. And we were stabbed in the back by Pence in the Congress that allowed this, and the and people like, well, various congressmen and such, senators, allowed the fake vote to go through, the counting of the ballots and from various states. And now you see them removing Trump from the ballot, trying to remove Trump from the ballot. The last president that was removed from the ballot was Abraham Lincoln, and it was precipitated by the Supreme Court Dred Scott decision. So you see the same setup for a civil war in America. And I know people have said, we don't want that. We don't want to go that way. Sometimes, again, when the truck is going downhill without brakes and heading towards a cement barrier, inevitably, it's going to have a mighty crash. And I see that happening in America. And at the same time, out of a forest fire, burning down the dead, diseased wood, which I would include all Democrats and rhinos as, you have to have a forest fire to burn down all the diseased wood before fresh sprouts will come up. And righteousness and holiness and truth, the things that this country started with, we need to return to. But I think we're going to have a Civil War forest fire before that'll happen, at best. Jim?
Brian?
Well, our energy needs to be directed in the right places. I think vigilantism will fail. I think that, unfortunately, there's many Americans that are fed up and overwhelmed with the entire scenario, but they don't want to break the law. The law is never going to allow us to put these people on trial and to sort out the problem from the inside out. So, unfortunately, I think the dough is hopelessly corrupted and spoiled. There's going to have to be a new beginning. And I don't think it's going to happen peacefully. I just, my instincts don't really allow for that option. So I'm going to roll with it and save as many as I possibly can in terms of helping people understand what's happening. And I'm going to do everything I can for my family and my friends to help them understand that this is the inevitable result of allowing these people to have control of our country in exchange for money. I think the best thing to do is to save it one person at a time. And until we can take an iconoclastic style of, you know, club to the secret societies that pull the strings, that control the banks, I don't think we have much hope. So the way I look at it is the war is probably lost, but the battle is for your neighbors, families, and friends.
Very sobering, my friend. Meanwhile, top 10 stories of 2023, number 8. Not only Biden, but the U.S. is losing. The General Assembly just rebuked U.S. hegemony. The significance of the December 12th UN General Assembly vote goes well beyond the demand for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza. It's a striking repudiation of U.S. hegemony. Significance not just the content of the vote, but the context thereof. U.S. planners long believed the U.S. can lead the world most legitimately and effectively through international bodies like the UN. Though the rest of the vote is significant for Israel, it's a context that's significant for the U.S. On December 8th, in response to UN Secretary General Guterres' invocation of Article 99 to demand the attention of the Security Council to protect international peace and security, the 15-member council voted for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire, 13 in favor, with the U.S. abstaining and the U.S. vetoing. In response to the American use of the veto, the General Assembly invoked the seldom-used Resolution 3778 A desperate move answered the need to get around U.S. leadership, which was perceived as the U.S. irresponsible use of the veto as a permanent member, a pushback against U.S. hegemony, a reminder of the need for Security Council reform and of the call for multipolarity. The U.S. vetoed the call, most of the rest of the Security Council, the General Assembly, and most of the world. But the General Assembly represents the world, not just the archaically ensconced permanent members of the Security Council, had recourse. In the eyes of the General Assembly, the U.S. abused its privileged power by neither seeking unanimity nor exercising restraint. Instead of placing its own foreign policy ambitions ahead of the foreign policy desires of the world, it ostensibly is meant to lead responsibly. So the world rebuked the U.S. Meanwhile, Ukraine, another historic U.S. war failure, all of Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan, and more. The war-indebted U.S. empire is faltering toward its historic and final demise. Every empire has its day in the sun. The U.S.-led NATO alliance held first NATO-Ukraine Council meeting in Brussels. As usual, cliched promises of supporting Kiev to the end were trotted out by all and sundry. In truth, these NATO events for Ukraine are becoming yawn fests. The whole sordid charade is only postponing the reality that a proxy war in Ukraine against Russia is a debacle for the Western powers. This is not something to gloat over. It's a tragedy and abomination. Up to 400,000, actually 500,000 Ukrainian soldiers have been killed, as well as tens of thousands of Russian military. Total casualties are no doubt in the millions. In addition, millions of civilians have been displaced as refugees in Russia and throughout Europe. Hundreds of billions of dollars and euros have been raided from Western taxpayers to fund this bloody fiasco. Not only that, but international tensions have been heightened between nuclear powers at a perilous pitch, not seen since the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962 at the depth of the Cold War. The calamity of Ukraine has resulted from pathetic groupthink by the Biden admin and its European lackeys. The thinking of American and European so-called leaders is shallow, narcissistic, and distorted by Russophobia. None of the Western political class have the intellect or historical understanding to reverse from the morass of their making. This is not merely a characteristic flaw of contemporary Western regimes. The futile and reckless war in Ukraine has been decades in the making, since the supposed end of the Cold War in 1991. The treacherous breaking of promises by American presidents, especially Bill Clinton and George W. Bush, to Russia to not expand NATO, and the insidious inveigling of Ukraine to join the alliance from 2008 onward, all led to the current eruption of conflict. Biden and other Western partners have simply been the last weak link in the chain of events over many years. If only the U.S. had people of the caliber of Professor John Mearsheimer, he, among other genuine American political thinkers, has warned for years U.S. policy of treacherous enlargement in NATO would eventually lead to conflict with Russia. All the NATO and EU talk is public relation bluster to conceal a brutal reality. The U.S. and its Western allies have created a monumental morass of misery for Ukraine by pursuing their nefarious geopolitical games to confront Russia. The rest of Europe, and indeed the whole world, has paid a terrible price for these imperial games. But Washington and its NATO allies cannot admit the odious, incriminating reality, as columnist Martin Jay has pointed out. The military alliance is approaching its 75th anniversary since being founded in 1949. There's huge pressure to try to make the Ukraine conflict look like some kind of victory to protect a fragile image of the obsolete alliance and the political reputation of incompetent Western leaders. Another columnist, Declan Hayes, is worth a read, lamenting the depth of strategic thinking by the U.S. and its NATO vassals. Hayes amusingly describes how American military ventures under the cover of NATO multilateralism are conducted as if the protagonists were directing a cowboy matinee movie. No wonder these cowboy politicians and military leaders have lost so many wars over the decade. Even the last war they claim to have won, World War II, was actually won by the Soviet Red Army. The Americans dropped atomic bombs on Japanese civilians to obliterate their way to a semblance of victory in the Asia-Pacific. Meanwhile, Russia's foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, has warned 500-year domination of the world by the West is ending. New Delhi. Russia's foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, warned the West that its 500-year domination of the world is coming to an end, the UK Base Express has reported. Lavrov said the conflict has made Russia stronger, even though the West has tried to weaken Russia in Ukraine. He compared to how Russia became stronger after defeating Hitler and Napoleon in the past. Lavrov said the hybrid war in Ukraine is based on cancel culture, adding it's up to the Ukrainians to recognize how deep they are in the hole where the American put them. Listen to Scott Ritter.
It tells you is the control that Israel has over the American domestic political reality. Israel controls everything. We're not a sovereign state anymore. Israel literally has bought the American Congress and bought the American presidency and bought the American establishment. Where's the American media? You know, I was always one of those people that sort of got a little uneasy when people would put up the, you know, the list of, you know, media moguls in America and talked about how many of them were Jewish and how many had links to Israel. I'm like, oh, God, that's a little anti-Semitic, don't you think? Not anymore. Because the silence of the American media is deafening. The American media is standing by and allowing Israel to commit genocide, and they're not doing a damn thing about it. This should be at the top of everybody's, this should be the lead story. They should be calling out the hypocrisy of the Biden administration. They should be condemning Benjamin Netanyahu. They should be condemning Israel, but they can't because Israel owns them. Israel owns everything. And so America is going to be sacrificed on the altar of Zionism, on the altar of this Israeli state. This is all about assuaging the ego of Benjamin Netanyahu, the world's most evil man today. There's nobody in the world more evil than Benjamin Netanyahu, and he's an American friend. This is Christmas. I hope every American listening looks in the mirror and pukes, because that's what you should do when you look at your reflection, because you're an American. You stand for nothing except the death of so many people. We suck as a country. We have become so far off course, it's not even funny. Look, there's nothing the United States can do to change what's happened here. We would have to physically land 100,000 Marines on the Yemen soil to secure the straits, to physically remove that. We don't have 100,000 Marines to land. And how are we going to get them that close to shore? The classic way that we're currently configured is a legacy system of amphibious warfare where we put all the Marines on one big ship, inviting that ship to be sunk. Why are we doing this? What do we hope to achieve? We will not open up the straits. We will not. This carrier battle group is a legacy concept dating back to World War II. It has no application in modern warfare today whatsoever. None. You think the Houthi are afraid of American airplanes dropping American bombs? It ain't going to change anything because now the airplanes take off from an aircraft carrier, except that it's going to be easier for the Houthi to target that aircraft carrier. Nobody's thinking through the consequences of American chest beating. We're America. We can deploy a carrier battle group. So what? No one cares anymore. No one's losing any sleep about an American carrier battle group two or three. The world doesn't care anymore because it's an irrelevant military force. We're doing this because Israel wants to kill Palestinians. Let's just be straight up here. There is no military strategy for Israel anymore. They can't win against Hamas. They've already proven it. And America's told them, you got to shut this thing down come the end of the year. Okay, you got to transition to another mode of operation. So what's Israel doing between now and the end of the year? simply slaughtering as many Palestinian civilians as possible. That's it. It's genocide. And we're the ones enabling it. We're going to veto another UN effort to bring about a ceasefire. A ceasefire. We say, no, let the Israelis kill as many Palestinians, because it's not about defeating Hamas. It's literally about slaughtering Palestinians. The Houthi have said, we want that to come to an end. We need humanitarian good. So America is going to sacrifice everything, everything, because we're going to lose. I'm just telling you straight up, we're going to lose. We're sacrificing everything for what? What it tells you is the control that Israel has over the American.
Scott, your thoughts aren't. Ritter is just telling it like it is. Your thoughts?
Yeah, he is. He says it, and that's, you know, that's the duty of a responsible man is to restate the obvious. George Orwell wrote, and he's saying it, and he's saying it like a Marine, and he's doing it very hard hittingly. His most powerful sentence was, "We suck as a country." That's not a personal gripe or an emotional complaint or a tantrum of a child. That's an accurate reflection, an accurate analytical judgment based on the behavior, the culture, the psychology, the choices, the political choices, the legal choices of our political leaders and the people who put them there. And you know, again, the United States Constitution and the Declaration of Independence describes the process for when a government becomes tyrannical and destructive of your rights. It is the duty and the right of the people to overthrow such government, not politely request, overthrow such government and reconstitute one which seems fitting unto them. And the first overthrow needs to be happening on the towns and the county level. The overthrow, and I said this when I first got back from Washington and they stole the election. I said, every county should be declaring, we do not recognize this fraud, Joe Biden, and we will not accept any orders, executive orders, any decrees from him having any legitimacy. The failure of the people to do that shows the corruption and the stupidity and the cowardice and the weakness and the effeminacy and the addiction to luxury which America has become. And I think, you know, lean years, gaunt years, famine in the land is sometimes the only thing to make people wake up. And violence, too. I thought about this, too. You know, we're men of violence, Jim, as part of our temperament and our military training. And that doesn't mean we're violent and we engage in violence, but we know how to engage in violence. We've been trained that way. And everybody who's played team sports is also capable of violence, because that's what sports are. It's a form of violence in a sense. It's expressed, you know, soccer, football, baseball, but your goal is going onto the field and you're putting yourself in a adrenaline violence against your competitor. In the military, violence against your enemy. And I think that's where America is being pushed to. And when violence starts to come up, remember, it's a mental condition first. It's a mental process of choices first. But when that adrenaline goes, when you go into violent mode, which is what you do when someone comes to attack or kidnap your child or your parent or steal from you, you go into violent defensive mode. If you see a group of thugs standing out your outside your house saying, you know, bring out your daughter so we may know her, you don't just stay in that house. You go out and you confront the violent that are planning on doing violence to you. That's where the country is going, and Ritter's addressing something that's going to start to pop it off. People are going to become increasingly violent against the violence being done to them. The immigration into this country, the illegal immigration, it's a form of violence. The Ukraine war, it's a form of violence against the American people, stealing their money and aiding and abetting a violent war that we will lose from. And Gaza and the backing of Israel is another form of violence against the American citizens. And the people who are too stupid to weigh in on this, they're going to eventually cause violence against themselves by the people who are going to rise up and reject this. So again, we're moving towards a clash of civilizations, a civil war, a revival, a revolution, a great awakening, whatever you want to call it. And the nature of a great awakening is you expel and stop consuming the death, the poison, the lies, the corruption, and you turn towards a political, philosophical, moral diet of truth, nourishment, traditional values, things that provide life. That's why the left is not going to be able to change, because their entire diet is death and destruction and thievery. And again, there's a clash coming to rectify the situation. It's inevitable, Jim.
Brian.
Here we go. We're going to replace Joe Biden in a Mission Impossible style thing, and we're going to make a New Year's address. Setting, Oval Office. My fellow Americans, tonight I have a brief but important announcement. Last night I had a realization: America is losing its moral power. We need to make a major course correction immediately. First, it's time to end the Zionist project of Israel. It's not working. To make sure our new policies aren't blocked at any level, I'm asking all Jewish members of my administration to submit letters of resignation by 5 p.m. tomorrow. Some of these people may be reinstated later. In the meantime, I'm making temporary appointments to fill key positions. Acting Secretary of State will be Professor John Mersheimer. As we approach 2024, I realize he's been correct in his foreign affairs assessment for the past decade. Acting Secretary of Defense will be Colonel Douglas McGregor. He's been correct in his military assessments for the entire conflict in Ukraine. Acting Secretary of Treasury will be Dennis Kucinich. He has significant experience combating financial corruption, including surviving an assassination attempt. His main job will be to clean up the Fed. He will return to the creation of our money from he will return the creation of our money from private bankers to the American people as specified in our Constitution. I was going to appoint Scott Ritter as acting director of the CIA, but I realize now that Kennedy was right. The CIA needs to be destroyed and abolished forever. So therefore, that agency has been gone. My chief of staff will be Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson. Wilkerson has extensive experience as chief of staff, understands CIA deceptions, and has accurately assessed our Middle East situation for the past decade. Therefore, I'm going to appoint Scott Ritter as new director of DHS. Further announcements will be coming soon.
Love it.
Where are Jim and I on that assessment? Jim and I for the education.
Absolutely sensational. Absolutely
sensational. Hey, look, it's a coup. It's a coup, but nobody's going to notice the difference because they've been using a puppet in that White House ever since. Let's just do it.
Yeah.
Don, take us out for part two, my friend.
Oh, wow. Well, part two. And we got to go longer. I mean, this year has been such a monumentally bad year that we have to have 3 hours worth. If you want to come back for the third hour, and by golly, you can't get any better shows than this. This is one that everybody has to see. I mean, that's just the absolute thing. Okay, so come on back for the third hour if you possibly can, and shiver it. Bye-bye.